Welcome to Science Friday on South Dakota Public Broadcasting. It's time for Tech Radio. Ahead on today's show, is your TV recording everything you say? It might be. Plus, YouTube is making it easier to occupy your kids with their own app. The federal government is still working to rid itself of hackers 3 months into a breach, and virtual reality might just be the next big thing. Our panelists weigh in on these topics and much more ahead on Tech Radio. We'll also answer your questions live on the air. Email them to midday@sdpb.org or find Tech Radio on Facebook. The conversation starts in just a few minutes, but first, this news. Happy Friday. It is February 20th, 2015, and this is Tech Radio. Kent Osborne is your host, but he's out today. I'm Keely Boltina. For the next hour, I talk with a panel of local tech enthusiasts about the latest and greatest in the emerging fields. Just a few topics we have planned for you. We'll break down the confusion of net neutrality less than 1 week from an FCC vote that could impact what you pay to use the internet. Plus, YouTube looks to kids as they create a new app. And you know Apple for iPhones and MacBooks. Now they're looking to break into the car market. Those conversations are ahead. Our gurus can also answer your questions about gadgets or trends, and you can get those ideas to us whatever way you prefer. Email us using the address midday@sdpb.org. That's SDPB for South Dakota Public Broadcasting. You can also find us on Facebook at facebook.com/techradio. Or you can tweet your questions to me. I am at Keely SDPB. So before we begin, you should know who's here for Tech Radio. We have Joel Brovelite in the studio here at the University of Sioux Falls. Thank you for showing up this Friday.
Absolutely. Where else would I be?
This is the only place. It's true. That's true. And we also, with the state's Bureau of Information and Telecommunications, from Pierre, Jeff Litterick on the phone. Hi, Jeff. How are you today?
Hello.
Hi there. Can you hear me?
Can you hear me?
We can. I think we have figured it out. That sounds good. Well, I'm glad you're both here. I appreciate it. John T. Meyer may be joining us later on in the show. We'll just play that by ear. But the first thing I wanted to launch into today, because we've had a lot of talk about it around my place, my mother-in-law showed up and was talking about the Samsung TV issue. Break it down for me. What's happening with some of the televisions that people are feeling a bit Big Brother about?
Okay. This story is kind of one that keeps kind of coming around and gets a little bit more serious each time it does. So I wanted to go over a little bit and dispel some of the rumors, but also highlight the actual problem. And what this is basically Samsung added into their TVs voice commands, and at the same time uses a third party. It's not actually Samsung, but it's a different third-party service to do more complex voice issues. Just like if you have an iPhone, you have Siri today, and you can ask Siri questions. It actually takes your voice and sends it up to the cloud to process your voice on big servers to find out and interpret what you're really asking and to return the result. And Samsung did this on their TVs for so that you could do web searches with your voice. You could ask Google, test or Google something and just talk to your TV and it would do a web search for you. All that stuff is up on the cloud. And the first thing you need to be aware of if you have a Samsung TV is, first of all, you have to network your TV, which you probably do for Netflix and other streaming stuff. And then the second part is you must use the enable the voice kind of feature. And the first thing I'll let you know is simple commands are not up on the cloud and being stored. If you say, you start the process with Hi TV, if you turn the volume up with your voice, turn it down, all that stuff is local. But when you do anything more advanced, and it's listening kind of all the time once you start this process, it sends all this stuff up to its third party up in the cloud on the internet for processing to see what you're really asking it to do. The problem that's come up recently with this is all that was unencrypted. Unlike Siri and Google Voice, which protects your data, your voice, and the conversations happening in the room through encryption when it gets set up to the cloud, this actually was not encrypted at all. And anyone can, well, I should say anyone, but if it's pretty easy to intercept and basically have a stream of everything that was being said in the room if you're using those TV features.
This does not comfort me, I just have to say. This does not make me feel, I don't have a Samsung TV, and so
I think in the idea of them trying to be transparent and trying to be a good company, this is what happens when you tell the truth, unfortunately. And the truth that they told was probably not done in the right way. Basically, they were doing, just like Jeff said, there are lots of voice command devices out there. Some people use them, some people don't. I happen to use a lot of voice command devices, my phone, TV, whatever I can get my hand on.
We have our Xbox hooked up to our TV, and we use those commands.
And it's much, not much better, it's much more possible to use voice command if it actually accesses the cloud or the internet. We'll just use that word. That's more understandable for some people. Because the database for voice recognition is just way too big to put on a single device, especially if you're talking to TV, which almost has no storage whatsoever. So it's got to access the cloud in order to recognize that. But people think it's stored locally because it happens so fast, but that's just the beauty of the internet. So the real deal is it's got to access voice command somewhere, and Samsung's not a big voice command company. That's not their area of expertise like Apple or Google might be, so they've got to go with a third party. So when they released the information, they said, hey, we just want you to know, just to be transparent, we are sending the stuff that you ask to a third-party company that isn't us, so that later on, of course, if they get in trouble, they can say, we told you, it's going somewhere else. And they've apologized for how they said it. I really don't think it's that big a deal. It only sends the stuff that is recording when you're asking for it. So if you say, record all the Law and Order stuff for me, conceivably it could do that. So it's only recording in that period of time. So what Samsung is saying is, if in the background your wife said that you're late on your car payment and that happens to get sent, they could conceivably have that information. It's not really going to matter or happen. I suppose if somebody was really trying to get a hold of your information, they might purposely get that stuff, but that's not really what's happening. It's a smaller deal than I think it's been made out to be. I think if you did some digging in voice command, you'd see a lot of this. The encryption part is not something I've looked into. I still don't think it's that big a deal because it is a secure connection between your TV and that third party. It may not be encrypted well enough, but since it's only taking these small snapshots, you know, if you're really worried about it, you probably had it turned off in the first place.
Yeah, Joel, Jeff, we've talked about security a lot when I've filled in on things, just a variety of things related to security and tech. Is this just one of those things that we have to expect a little bit less privacy in certain circumstances when we use this stuff?
Well, one thing I want to point out is it doesn't necessarily mean it's little snippets. If you're in an app that actually on the TV, like the web browser that supports voice, anything in that room the whole time you're on there, because it has to be listening all the time to process it, is basically being sent up and recorded. So, but if you're not using that, you're just watching TV, you're okay. So it is a little bit different, man. Maybe for businesses and stuff like that, where they may have in a conference room and they have the web part
yes,
up, the web
yeah.
search
and,
part.
And or, and I guess what I was saying, the snapshots were, if the TV's off, you know, conceivably you turn the TV off before you plan your next bank robbery. You're not going to watch TV while you do that. You're going to probably be concentrating on the plans all that stuff. So if the TV's off, it can't record. It doesn't record. If you unplug it, it can't record. If you turn that feature off, it can't record. So those are the snapshots I'm talking about. Obviously, if you're using
that. So that it's not like it's a bug that sits in the corner of your house all the time.
Yes. And unless, of course, it's an electronic device that's connected to the internet, it is hackable, like all electronic devices. And everything can be. So could it be hacked and turned on and used against you? So yes, and so could everything else. So I always tend to fall on the we want these features and they're going to be growing pains. This is a growing pain. I can guarantee you that they are working overtime in trying to over encrypt and change the language and maybe even take some of this stuff in-house. They've made their mistake. They will fix it. If they don't, they'll sell fewer TVs and somebody else will.
Sure.
So one of the nice things about being connected, though it's hackable, is when they do release that firmware or come down and be installed kind of in the background, and everything will be safe from that point on. So,
sure, and maybe a warning to some other companies if they're doing the same thing, to just pay attention.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, this kind of gets into a whole privacy issue. You kind of mix in the Xbox. If you most people don't realize this, but if you have the Kinect part of the Xbox, it's actually recording video and audio 24/7, waiting for you to give it commands. And that's both video and audio, because you can use gestures and stuff. So while that's not all set up on the internet, if someone was able to hack into the Xbox, they would have basically a security camera into that room 24/7. So a lot of this stuff's going to offer these type of options, and it's going to kind of get back to where when this stuff comes up, we have to enforce better thinking on part of the manufacturers to better protect our privacies. The features are nice. There's nothing wrong with the features, but they do have to put a little bit more concern into the end consumer's privacy, which we'll get into a little bit even worse in a new laptop thing that just came out this week, too. Next.
Right. So. Yeah, and we can talk about that now because I have to tell you, every time I do this show with you guys, I get a little more just unsure when I walk into my house and I see that Xbox connected to the TV. Now, this is what I will think about. So I'm trying to keep my common sense about me. But sometimes I hear about these things, and I think I am more of the less informed part of the electronic population, where I just go, what? Are you kidding? What is happening here?
You can dig into any part of technology and privacy, and as soon as you start doing it, that's when the anxiety level raises.
Right.
And that's going to happen to everybody. Some people can handle it, and some people don't. So that's just.
But part of it is that trade-off. As we start, figuring out these new things, and we want these conveniences, then mm-hmm. we give some things up.
Yeah, so. And a lot of it, like I said before, is just a growing pain. You know, the privacy that we have access to with regards to Facebook and the internet are so much better now than they were a year ago, or that they were 10 years ago. 10 years ago, that wasn't even a discussion, and you could access people's information if you had the wherewithal or the right subpoena, and it wasn't even talked about or heard about. And now it's much more in the forefront. So just growing pains.
Sure, we can move on then to another topic that Jeff just talked about here. When it comes to a specific laptop that has been shipped, whenever you get those new devices, a lot of them wind up having a lot of things already loaded onto them. Jeff, why don't you explain what is happening with a particular set of Lenovo laptops?
Well, I'm going to first preface that this is not the first time it's happened, and we'll kind of get into this, the growing pains, and this applies to even Facebook and a lot of stuff. This is the first time it was encouraged by the company itself making the product. And when I mean encouraged, this is what the scary part is they actually, Lenovo, released a message, and I'll describe what was really happening. But they released a message kind of like a surprise that anyone even had a problem with this. They thought their customers would welcome what we're going to explain. And they actually did a press release on this saying, we're not seeing anything wrong with this. We feel our customers feel this is an added value. And it's the outrage to this kind of stuff and the outrage to Facebook when stuff has come out to light, because Facebook was for the longest time super bad on privacy. And it's only kind of the consumer outrages that forced them into making these changes, as Lenovo is going to find out real quick. What the base is Lenovo for some time has been installing a spyware as part of their base package. And well, you've heard in the past stories about spyware and malware being accidentally installed at a factory on devices. Some hard drives came with some malware a few years ago, some USB drives, where it was installed not but unknown to the company, and they quickly solved it and cleaned it up. In this case, the company actively worked with this third-party company to install this spyware onto every laptop they sold. Now, the spyware itself is actually pretty tricky in that it actually intercepts all encrypted communications, too. It actually de-encrypts everything you try to do encrypted on the web and unencrypts it and sends it up to third parties. And the reason they do that is targeted ads. this is kind of an adware slash spyware. It's not really malware as per se. The goal of the company was to sell you ads that were targeted to you, and because they wanted to target to you, they would actually break all your encryption that you tried to put on to go to encrypted sites like Amazon and stuff, or your email and stuff, to find out, you know, how to what you were interested in to target new ads for you. And then it would override and replace the ads on a website with its own ads. It's kind of one of those things, and in and of itself, it's kind of a general trend or philosophy by companies that, and this is a much larger issue where the consumer needs to pay five times for everything they've ever buy, and you buy it, you pay for it, you use it, you now need to pay us again to be able to use it. So, and this is kind of what it was. The manufacturer was making a financial statement with this adware company and to basically feed you ads on a machine you bought. Unfortunately, because it did unencrypt everything and stuff, it's a humongous security risk and privacy risk. So the outcry is already loud enough in the security circles that no other company will probably ever try this again. Lenovo has now come out and said they will remove the spy adware. They will be sending out an update to all the users that should remove it in the future. But for right now, you're kind of stuck with it until the company releases the program to uninstall it.
Here is my professional take on this. Not cool. Okay? Like, at what point does this make sense? Or that if, I mean, I don't understand how... strategically, it makes sense. But when you're dealing with clients and their reaction, if it's something that you can't openly say to them on the front end and have them okay with, I just wonder.
Yeah, well, I mean, and I think the market will bear that out. They will lose business and people, hopefully people will think twice.
Because it's a trust issue now.
Yeah, and I would say that as a consumer on the front end, I think long and hard before I buy products that might have access to my data, and I think about whether I'm going to trust them. I don't go, well, that one's cheaper, so I'm going to buy that. Or I've never heard of this company, and not that I've never heard of Lenovo, but I have. When I'm going to put my data at risk, no matter what it is, I think about it, and I think most consumers should, and I think going forward we're going to. That's going to be a determination, just like convenience and service and price, and security is just going to be one of those things. And I don't think that's a bad thing. I think that's great, and that's what places like public radio and news and newspapers and websites and blogs are there for, to ferret that stuff out for us. If you're going to buy a computer or a device that you use voice commands and you don't do your research,
You know, it also kind of gets into a bigger thing that consumers probably need to be aware of, more so than they are today, is that your data has monetary value. The company didn't really do this for malicious. They wanted to make money because your data actually made money for them. Data is valuable, your data, and you need to be aware of who you plan to share that data with, because it is a valuable commodity, and it's up to each consumer to decide how valuable and what I'm willing to part with and for what features or benefits that data comes with. And if you think about it that way, I think a lot of consumers start making more intelligent decisions about what they buy and what services they use, and because they're fully informed then on, the risks and also the benefits.
Right. And I do think it makes a little bit of a difference that this was shipped with hardware that I would be buying, as opposed to when I do go on Facebook and I do like something. Because when I'm on Facebook, I recognize that I'm giving up all of this data willingly. I'm putting it in. I recognize that they are taking it, crunching the numbers, they're analyzing that. And I just feel like it's different mentally for me.
Oh, yeah. And I think it would be for most consumers. And that's the big shift, I think, in products. Whereas I think there's this thought out there that, if you buy a physical object, that is like a big empty jug that you buy and you can put whatever you want in it. And if you buy software, then that's something that you don't physically have all the control over. Ever increasingly, hardware is software. You know, the fact that you can go down and buy a Google Play stick and plug that into your TV and get all sorts of channels, or an Apple TV do the same thing, that's almost all software. The little hardware in it, the 18 cents worth of hardware in that, it means nothing. It's just an interface. All hardware is now software. So if you think that no matter what you're buying, whether that's a thermostat or a door lock or a car or a laptop, you know, there's more software on that. There's more money in software in that than there is hardware.
Absolutely. So I just need to maybe rethink how I'm automatically categorizing
things.
You
and everybody else.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Well, it seems like a good time to take a quick break. This is Tech Radio. We will come back and chat about a new YouTube app and some virtual reality possibilities. You're listening to Science Friday here on South Dakota Public Broadcasting. Welcome back to Tech Radio here on South Dakota Public Broadcasting. Your regular host, Kent Osborne, is out. I'm Keely Boltina, and we're talking the latest and greatest in tech with Joel Brovelite and Jeff Litterick. Want to move on quick to a story that I cannot take credit for, because we are at the University of Sioux Falls at our studio, and there are lots of college kids here, and they are actually the ones today who are talking about this concept of virtual reality coming into everyday life. They were talking about the Samsung Gear VR headset this morning that will, you know, put you in a place and really take you to a different room. So when you turn your head in this headset, you'll see the different parts of the room as if it were real. And I am fascinated by this, and they're really excited about this. Is this something that is legitimately happening now instead of just something they put in science fiction?
Yeah. Well, I mean, companies have been researching this type of technology, you know, going on as long as, you know, we've had visual representation of spaces on computers. So, you know, early 90s, if not before. And it's just getting to where the hardware and the technology is being miniaturized enough and cheap enough that's a possibility. Basically, if you're a major tech company like Apple or Google, or Microsoft, and you're not working in this area, you know, assuming that sometime where people are sitting in front of a piece of glass to get all of their information, and it's always going to be that way, then you're not long for this world. I think the idea that we'll be buying large pieces of glass to hang on our walls or put in front of our faces or carry around is pretty ridiculous. You know, 5, 10, certainly 20 years from now, everything will be a display, and whether that is a pair of glasses or a contact lens or something that projects or something that is able to suspend in midair, you know, like a hologram, that's really where it's going to be at, because it's so inconvenient to have to go to a device to get your information. It's much easier to make your information accessible everywhere, and you can only do that so much with voice command and voice feedback. So I think it's obvious that they're going to do that. Will we see it in the mass market in a year? Probably not. But we're already seeing with the Google Glass, and people can call that a flop, and they'd be wrong because that was just research. We've already seen that with that, and all the products subsequently are going to be just built on things like that.
Well, and there are a couple of layers of this virtual reality discussion as far as the students today were talking about the goggles that Samsung has shown, but NBC posted earlier today that Apple has acquired a patent for a virtual reality system that would work with iPhones. So you're right in that this is not a one company working on this tiny little niche.
Yeah.
Right. Microsoft has their whole HoloLens, which they have really big concepts and really big plans for. If you go out to their website and see, to change the entire, you know, user computer interface through holograms. This is the future. It's probably two to 5 years still before it becomes really really practical and, you know, worthwhile, expensive in terms of cost. But it is coming, and every major tech company is moving that direction.
Interesting. I find that concept fascinating.
Yeah,
and that it's going to be about that immersive experience instead of that interaction.
I think people think of it more as like, well, that's going to be great for entertainment, but I'm not going to be able to use that at all. I don't think that that's really the case. If you consider having access to all of your files for a law firm, sitting at your desk without having to go to floor three or travel on a plane to another place just to access these files, you can basically, whether it's goggles or it's built into the display you're already using, you can walk through this virtual space, have access to all of this information in a metaphor that makes sense to you, opening a filing cabinet, sorting through papers, or maybe in the research model where you can turn and you have access to a DNA strand over here and you can compare it visually to another one to your left. It has so many more applications. Entertainment is the very smallest portion of that. So I think that's where it's really going to be valuable.
So I will mention, if you go watch the Iron Man series of films, that's what people are talking about and that's a really good, because it's hard to describe a hologram or a hologramic UI interface. And while the movies take some little bit, are not close to reality in every respect, that UI he uses, Tony Stark, in the movies is kind of what Microsoft and some others are aiming for to be a reality, so that you can move your hand and manipulate models in 3D space, zoom in, zoom out, move around, swipe to, or voice commands. So that idea is what Microsoft, especially Microsoft, is focusing on their product, made of overlays, 3D objects onto physical objects with holograms to show you what stuff would look like and all those neat benefits right out of the Iron Man movies.
And it goes into what I was saying just before, because software will be the new hardware. It is so much easier once the research and development is done to have access to a 3D environment where you have access to keyboards and equipment, rather than actually having to buy all of that physical equipment, move it into a location, set it all up. Once you've built the digital version of that, everybody has access to that. Everybody who has access to this 3D environment. So all of your researchers have access to these 3D models and these separate screens and this room that has all this information in it. You don't have to spend $8 million for each workstation. You spend $8 million once and you've got a limitless number of workstations.
I am really skeptical now, but I also just think about
You call me in 10 years.
Well, I was thinking now that like cell phones. Okay, so we have an old, one of those tiny iPods, and I don't know which generation it is, so please don't ask me. And our two-year-old was wandering around the house, and we used it to play some music in her room, and she found it, and she said, "Oh, my phone. And I thought, she probably does think that's a phone, because how do I usually use my iPhone?
Does she try and touch the screen to
Absolutely.
Make it?
Yeah. Oh, she can manipulate it.
Oh, yeah,
and that's,
yeah.
I mean,
so
it's
got
scary.
A touch screen.
It does.
Yes, because I have an old iPod that you have the wheel. Yeah, and my uh-huh. So it doesn't work. It doesn't work.
Touching the screen. Yeah. Yeah, but I mean, so I talk about it as my phone because uh-huh. I make calls on it and it's my phone. It
sure.
is. But
yeah.
The majority of the way she sees me use it is that touch screen, you know, looking things up or playing Netflix, those things on my phone. So,
and
of course, phone means something different to her.
Talking to her daughter, she'll call it a phone. And her daughter was like, "What's a phone?"
Right.
You know, or any number of things. Why do you keep looking for that little device? We don't use that anymore.
Who cares?
Mom. Yeah.
Right. Uh-huh. Exactly. Antiquated.
Yeah.
That's funny. Well, I wanted to talk too. I'm just back. It's my first full week back off of maternity leave. So
congratulations, by the way.
Thank you. So I am just, I probably am suddenly like hyper attentive to kid issues when the things pop up on my screen. But I now see that YouTube is making an app for kids, which I will tell you in my house is a very big deal.
Oh, yeah.
Because the two-year-old will sit there. It started because the grandparents played the Wheels on the Bus on YouTube for her. And then she figured out that there are all of these videos on the side panel that she can touch and that will bring them up. And so you turn your back for 10 seconds and she's got a different video up. So I just think that this concept of YouTube going, okay, well, parents are asking us for this. We're going to fill that need is really going to be effective for a lot of parents.
Yeah, you know, I mean, you're able to, you know, change the level of content in YouTube available by, you know, adjusting settings. So it's not, it's really just putting a skin on something they've already had access to. But it's smart to do. You know, I like you, have a child that loves YouTube. And, you know, her first entertainment option is watching videos on YouTube over playing video games and over watching television. As a matter of fact, I think I may have mentioned it last week or 2 weeks ago, but my daughter got in trouble and I said, well, no more TV for the rest of the weekend. She's like, that's okay. I don't watch TV. I'd rather watch YouTube. I'm like, ah, darn it.
Right, next time. So, you know, go straight for the YouTube.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, she's not smart enough to outthink me yet. Right. But in 1 year, she will be. So, you know, TV was a big deal for her. She doesn't even think that TV's a thing. You know, she's like, that's just the big internet.
Sure.
Because she'll take YouTube and send it right up to the TV.
Right. Or play Netflix from the TV.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Using her iPad. Mm-hmm. So, you know, and it's not because the... I don't like to hear that kids are so smart with these devices. Like, no, they're just used to it, and they don't have the trappings that you and I have that think that we still want to dial a phone or we need this metaphor of a desk for us to be able to absorb that information. They don't need that.
Right.
They just they don't have.
And
the,
I've had an iPhone
there.
That you can touch since our toddler was born. Mm-hmm. So that's
absolutely
what she's seen. This isn't new to her, as opposed to, you know, when my grandma learned her iPad.
Yeah, I was in it's line the other new. Day, and the checkout person in the. Lady was talking, and she's like, yeah, my daughter can swipe a card. It's like, I don't know how they know how to do that. Like, how would they know how to do otherwise?
Sure.
They see you do it 100 times. You know, rats can figure it out after 3, so your kid's going to be able to sort that out. They're just not used to give them some cash and have them make change.
Right.
That'll throw them off. And it's also a useless skill anymore. I take that back. No emails, no comments.
Right,
it is useful. It will become increasingly useless, I'm afraid.
Sure. And the ability to count back change backwards.
Yeah, that's a skill, and it's a dying skill, and it will die eventually.
Jeff, do you think this makes sense that that these companies are starting to figure out, you know, we have this core product and we can just tailor it to these teeny little bits of the population and that'll be really effective for us?
Yeah, and somewhat, especially with, you know, YouTube and stuff, especially for, you know, kids, because it's also a great, you know, learning tool besides an entertainment tool. And but you need to be able to focus that stuff. And you're starting to see that in other apps, even on Facebook, and some of the apps on Facebook, is they're kind of targeting very kind of more niche stuff, because the general growth is kind of there and stalled out. I mean, everyone who ever wants to watch YouTube has watched YouTube, or is going to watch Tubu is watching YouTube. So these help segment the markets. And I think it's one of those things where Google says, do you know evil? It ties into that, where they're offering a really great service for parents to be able to kind of instruct their kids without opening them up to the wider horror that's of the internet, if they just were, you know, left to their own devices that they could easily find. So in this case, I think you're going to see a lot more, especially for, you know, small kids and stuff, because they're more savvy, they're using the technology more, but they're more distracted, and they do need some focus.
Sure, yeah, that focus is a big thing. And just being able to know that I don't have to, like, if she is in the kitchen with me while I'm making something to eat, I don't have to be there every second watching exactly what she's watching on YouTube to make sure that she doesn't click on something that might be scary or might be something inappropriate for her age. Just knowing that there's that level of filter makes me feel a little bit better about letting her be independent and check some of those things out and really explore on her own.
Yeah, and that really is the best way to do it. You know, everybody can go into the settings and change this, that, and the other thing. You know, but we're consumers, and we either don't have the time, don't want to figure out how to do it, and frankly, shouldn't have to. And so it's a good move, and more companies should do that, I think.
Sure. There's one other story that kind of ties into the social media aspect, the app aspect of this discussion that I wanted to mention before our next break. And that is that I think it's really interesting that the rapper Iggy Azalea says that she is quitting social media. She is over it. She doesn't like some of the comments that were made specifically about her body. She doesn't like what people are saying. So she's handing it over to her staff and they'll post generic things and she's just over it. And I've heard that from some people, not necessarily the exact same circumstance, and clearly they are not, you know, world famous rap artists that I'm talking to, but people that are just ready to go, I'm done with this sometimes.
You know, I mean, I have a lot of sympathy for people. I don't have personal experience, but I have sympathy for people that are famous, especially celebrities. That has got to be a nightmare to traverse. I wouldn't. For their status, I wouldn't do it in a minute. Personal attacks. It's growing pains, and a lot of people have done that. I personally did that years ago. I don't do social media other than this show for those same reasons. Not because I get a lot of attacks. I don't want people to wish me a happy birthday, and that's the only contact they give me the entire year. Sure. You might as well not have gotten it, frankly, in my opinion. So I think that's smart to hand it over. I'm surprised she didn't do that already.
But it seems to be the public's expectation that people should be able to follow a particular celebrity and have that direct or what feels like that direct contact with that celebrity.
Well, honestly, I think she's probably just being honest about it. I'll bet there's a huge number of very famous people that have, social media accounts that aren't really doing their own. And in fact, probably more than not. She's just being honest about it. I applaud her for doing that. I think it'll probably hurt her career slightly, but she's probably okay with that. And frankly, as long as she's gotten the money out of the album sales that she deserves, she's probably okay. Things are changing in social media. Facebook's not what it once was for the younger set. Twitter's not even.
Right.
So it's probably, in the long run, maybe not going to hurt as much as it may have a year or two ago.
Sure. All right. Sounds like we are up against our last break for the show. So we will go ahead and come back in just about a minute to talk more. We want to talk about a vote that's set up with the FCC next week. I know we've talked about net neutrality before, but there might be some changes ahead. So we'll talk about that next on Tech Radio. You're listening to South Dakota Public Broadcasting. Tech Radio is back here on Science Friday with South Dakota Public Broadcasting. Once again, I'm Keely Boltina, your regular host, Kent Osborne. We'll be back on the next Tech Radio, but for the rest of the hour, you've got me. We've got Joel Brovelite here at our studio at the University of Sioux Falls, and Jeff Litterick is on the phone. I want to talk about net neutrality right now, and I know that saying that phrase automatically makes some people tune out, but it's important because the FCC vote about expanding the regulation of internet service is coming up next Thursday. So give me the 30-second down and dirty, what is net neutrality?
I'll start off. The most important concept of net neutrality is it's going to shape how you use and what content you get on the internet in the future, and it's quite a big deal, and there's a lot of issues on both sides of it. There's a lot of goods and negatives with what the FCC is trying to do, but the major issue in net neutrality is it's going to shape the way you use the internet and how you interact with it and the content that is delivered over it to you. So that's why it's so important.
Sure, because the FCC is trying to reclassify the internet so that they can, the theory is, make sure that the companies are charging fairly for internet usage instead of perhaps creating different levels of access. Is that fair?
That's part of it. It's also so that they can review agreements like Netflix has to pay on the back end, different ISPs, different amounts of money to be able to serve a quality stream to you. A lot of Verizon users and Comcast users recently on Netflix, they weren't gaining a very good stream or quality of Netflix because they both Verizon and Comcast were actually throttling down and not supplying enough bandwidth for all their users to be able to use the Netflix service. So Netflix is actually paying them money to improve the service so that the Verizon customers get the full and Comcast customers get the full speeds that Netflix offers. So it gets into, you know, a lot of back-end relationships about how your ISP can determine the quality of your experience, not just where you can go and how about it. And while the FCC doesn't want to ban the fees necessarily, because there is this cost associated with this bandwidth usage, they want to be able to monitor it and make sure it doesn't become unfair and doesn't get monopolized, because Comcast, for example, is going to be the largest cable company. They also own most of the large content providers, and they already have been proven to be given preferred treatment to their own providers and worse treatment to others. So there's a lot of issues in kind of fairness on all, so that everyone plays fair across the internet.
Right, and it seems kind of like a dry subject, or the name doesn't really represent the fact that, hey, if you watch Netflix, if you stream video from online, this could impact you. You should pay attention.
Right. Any kind of service you use on the internet, it could possibly impact you. Data caps, you know, special fees to get faster access to these services or not, that's all going to be part of this, and you're going to see that in the future. Over time, the ISPs have been, you know, somewhat, some ISPs, we luckily in South Dakota, we don't usually have this issue with our ISPs, but have been locking and doing data caps and limiting you, and then limiting how fast you can be once you reach your data cap and extra charge and stuff. It's all going to get kind of tied into this, and it's a very broad subject, and the SEC is just trying to get a handle around it, and they're trying to use the tools that Congress has given them to be able to do this, and this is why they're pursuing this. Because the courts have ruled against them when they tried to enforce neutrality and fairness in the past.
Excellent. Jeff Litterick, I know you have to run. Thank you so much for joining us on today's Tech Radio. Jeff Litterick joined us on the phone from Pierre. He's with the state of South Dakota. Thanks again, Jeff.
Thanks, all.
Have a good day. Joel, still talking about net neutrality.
Of course.
What do people need to know?
You know, I think Jeff covered it very well. What I would say in broad strokes is what gets decided next week is not going to be the end of it. It's just the beginning. All it is a large rudder shift. Whether it's going to go towards the fewer regulations on companies or more regulations, and usually when you say regulations, most of the people out there go, I don't want any regulations. The internet shouldn't be regulated. Well, unfortunately, if things don't get regulated, you know, things can be taken advantage of. You know, we have regulations that involve, you know, monopolies, large corporations. So I think the path that they want to go down is the best one, in my opinion, making it more of a public utility. I think if you ask anybody, say, you know, under 30, do you think the internet is a public utility? I think they would probably think it already is. It's certainly more important than a lot of the ones that are regulated like utilities. So it's just a shift from a private business and just using phone lines for transportation, and more to a shift, if that's what gets decided, to a regulated public utility. So this isn't the end of the conversation, it's just the beginning.
Well, and there's certainly another level of challenge when you're trying to sort through the politics of everything, because we've done stories on the news side because we have some lawmakers that say, well, the FCC shouldn't be regulating the internet. We need to pass legislation through Congress to do it. And the FCC is saying, no, this is kind of our territory. We should have this power. And everybody, including the companies that are supplying this, says, hey, we want people to have the internet. We want it to be fair. Why would we do anything like this?
Yeah, and it depends on what company and what area you are in. I mean, there are some of the largest companies out there that want these regulations. There are also some of the largest companies out there that don't want these regulations. You'll find people on both sides. And frankly, if you walk down the street and you pose the question the right way, you'll get either answer.
Sure.
So it's very complicated. And when it got named net neutrality, even the guy that came up with that term is mad that it gets used.
Sure.
It's just very confusing. So it's best, no matter what happens, that it moves forward. And next week is going to be kind of the first step in that way, just to change the discussion. And hopefully they do it next week and they don't put it off again. That would be a total drag, but It's just the first part next
yeah.
week.
Yeah. I just think it's particularly difficult when all of these, when different people that have different sides all have the same stated goal, that everybody should have access to the internet, that the internet opens up worlds to people regardless of income or location.
To be fair, you could say that about just about any topic.
Sure, true.
It's just that this one is so confusing that the true meaning can be hidden in the technical jargon, which is unfortunate.
Absolutely. Joel, you are, we always introduce you as the Mac guy.
Yeah, Mac guru, I prefer.
I'm sorry, Mac
because
guru.
Because it shows my Indian heritage.
That's what it is. We will stick with that. And you're sitting here with your MacBook Air,
yes.
and you have all of your iPhones.
Yeah,
I bring
them all, everything. No, that's just not true.
Are you going to drive an Apple car?
You know, when I first heard of that, you know, immediately, it was the first thing I checked. You know, I didn't even say goodbye to my kid, and, you know, I just pushed her out the door.
Right,
it was freezing
you can just
cold. I had to go check it out.
Uh-huh.
And my first thought before I even got the information was, well, that's probably not true. And my first opinion is still the same one. I do think Apple is working on first, we should back up. It was announced in some very reliable magazines and online news areas that Apple has a team of people working on a car. It hasn't been announced by Apple that they're going to make a car or that they're doing anything related to cars other than the software that they've already announced. So it's not coming from the horse's mouth, but very reliable sources. This is what I really think is happening. They are working on cars because they have to work on cars. They have to be in the battery space. They have to be in the electric car space. They have to be in all these spaces to continue to have the impact that they are. I don't really think they're going to release a car. Now, I could be wrong. I'd be happy to be wrong because, yes, I would buy an Apple car. I just would. In fact, if I didn't, I don't think I could show my face anywhere.
Right.
Frankly.
We would hassle you every time you showed up saying,
absolutely.
Where's your Apple car, huh?
But that being said, I really think that they're just using it as development and research. It's easier for them to have all of the technology under the hood figured out so that they can develop products like they're used to doing. You know, Apple doesn't say, okay, well, let's just buy all these parts and then we'll figure out a way to make them work. It's just not how Apple works. They develop all of their own technology and they make it all work together. I think it's way more likely that they're going to license and or sell technology, whether that's engines or batteries or what have you, software, to manufacturers to use. It's way more likely than them actually coming into a whole new market space. Now, having said that, I hope I'm wrong. And I've been wrong before.
It's on the record now.
I've also been right before, too. But I think that's really what we're talking about. And really, it's not going to come to fruition until 2020. 3 years is a long time. So hard to tell what's going to happen then.
But Apple has really created a fan base of loyal customers.
Says the person wearing an Apple shirt right in front of me.
It was required to try to fit in with the tech crew today while I was filling in.
I don't even have an Apple shirt.
Well, I'm just more advanced than you are, I guess. That's what it is.
Isn't that the truth?
Absolutely. But, you know, so all of these loyal people that are walking around with their iPhones, you know, get excited about rumors like this or just little inklings like what ifs. Because they really do, unlike some other companies, have a dedicated following.
Well, and, you know, here's the deal. If I am wrong, and I hope I am, you know, there's a lot of money to be made in cars. There is way more margin in vehicles. Margin, by the way, what I mean is profit.
Absolutely.
In a vehicle than there is in a phone.
Mm-hmm.
So they might just be making sure that they're not left behind. You know, the car, ever increasingly, is less of a just a nuts and bolts device that gets you from point A to point B and more of a kind of mobile home where you might have access to the internet. You might you might keep, you know, your lunch in a cooler in the trunk and you can access power to do all sorts of things. We do all this stuff now. Navigation.
Absolutely.
These are all areas that Apple's very good at. So it would make sense that they would research that technology. I'm just not so sure they're going to come to market with a Apple branded car.
That there's going to suddenly be a factory pumping out Apple cars.
But I could be wrong.
You hope you're wrong.
I hope I'm wrong.
I get it. Ugh. Very nice. Excellent. Well, thank you, Joel, for sticking out and got it through the whole hour of Tech Radio with me.
Yeah, I apologize to everybody that had to listen to my voice the
entire
time.
Well, everybody else, you know, busy lives. So it's been great to talk with you. Earlier on the show, we had Jeff Litterick on the phone from Peer. So hopefully this last hour has given you a little bit of information about a lot of different topics. And Tech Radio will be back in just a couple of weeks. Your regular host, Kent Osborne, will return at that time. I filled in for him today. I'm Keely Boltina. Thank you so much for listening and have a wonderful Friday.